This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 108. Tom, how's it going?
Bonsoir.
Ooh.
That's wrong. We're not recording at night.
Oh, we're not. But you may be listening to it at night. And if you are, that was just for you.
Bon nuit. It's good night, I think, as well.
Is that more like a see you later and it's nighttime?
I think it's a proper, like, evening. I don't know. I'm not French. I do not claim to be French. Do you want to know how not I'm that not French? The police are coming. No, I'm not that French. I took Shay to the Eiffel Tower and it took us like 5 hours to get there because we kept getting off wrong subway spots.
Oh,
and we got there and she was like, it's not that big. And then we found that there was an aquarium underneath the Eiffel Tower.
I didn't know that.
It's like across the road underneath, not directly underneath, but yeah. And they had hammerhead sharks underneath Paris. There you go.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you know what I saw underneath Paris when I went there the first time?
Hobos?
No, I saw lots of skeletons and skulls.
Oh, crypts.
Catacombs. Nice. Love them. It was the very first thing I did when I got there. I arrived, tried to figure out the taxis as they were like, no, I don't go to that area of Paris. I'm like, well, I don't even understand what that. Okay. And then I dropped bags off at hostel, found friend who I couldn't find at first. And then she was like, let's go to catacombs. I'm like, okay.
How Indiana Jones of you.
You knew I loved it though.
Did you eat any chocolat?
Oui. Oh, I had pan au chocolat.
That's the business. Mm. What a way to start a day. You know, you're already pretty fancy having a croissant.
Yeah, yeah.
Max that butter up. And then, you know what would make this better? Just some half-dried chocolate in the middle.
It is quite dry, isn't it?
It's good. I like it.
Do you think anybody ever microwaves it so that it goes gooey?
You can't see, but my hands are up.
And what is it?
Because I don't want hazelnut in there. I'm not looking for Nutella. Uh-huh. It's not Nutella one. I just like it when it's proper chocolate.
And what is the percentage of betterness having the chocolate melted?
Well, I wouldn't go full melt.
Okay.
You only chuck it in for like 5, maybe 8 seconds.
Just to get a little bit of...
Yeah. Kind of thing, you know, if you've got a choc chip muffin and you don't want that thing hot, you just want it a little bit
moist
in the middle, then, you know, 8 seconds, that's about enough. So it just tenderizes it just a touch. There we go. Pan au chocolat talk.
Hammerhead sharks and catacombs.
Mm.
Perfect. Haven't even gotten into the actual program. Amazing.
And now a word from our sponsor. As humans, we cook in our kitchens. In summers, out in our backyards barbecuing. And we even like to go back to our caveman roots and use a campfire every once in a while. In an exciting new game show, we force our contestants to prepare gourmet dishes in wild and dangerous locations. Chicken schnitzel with salad made as they whitewater raft. Baked Alaska made in a heavy snowstorm in Alaska. Bouillabaisse prepared in a big cat enclosure. Al dente homemade pasta in front of judgy Venetian, Roman and Tuscan nonnas. Smashed avo on toast for boomers. The toughest of tough conditions. Who will rise as the champ? Extremely Extreme Cooking, streaming now.
I've got a good quiz for you today.
Good.
I did a lot of research.
Yes.
But it's also a good guessing one.
All right.
You can just have a crack.
I'll have a crack.
Yeah. I found a lot of news.
That's good. I don't have as much news, but I've got a lot of trailers.
With our powers combined, we've got a full podcast.
We're like two-fifths of a Voltron.
That's right. We've got a listener review,
ooh,
like a watching suggestion review,
thanks,
which we'll do a little bit later on. And I've watched something that has been nominated for a Golden Globe. I unintentionally did that. So we'll talk about that as well.
Aren't you highfalutin?
I'm so highfalutin. Duh. And I listened to it. I watched it all. I listened to it as well because it was in English, so I had to.
To get context to what you were seeing.
That's right.
Can't lip read.
Not really. We'll get into the trailer soon, but what I like is when you watch a movie trailer on YouTube, but the subtitles are there and it'll say like loud, exciting action music, sirens.
It gives you, yeah.
I understand why it's there, but it amuses me anyway. Let's get into the news. Got some sad stuff to kick it off with.
Oh, good.
I know.
Let's join that catacomb talk.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
So Carol Spinney, who was Big Bird, Oscar the Grouch on Sesame Street for decades, I was going to say years and years, but actually decades, has passed away at the age of, I think it was 85?
Yeah, something like 50 years.
Very long time. Did you read Sesame Street's comments? They were really nice. I didn't keep the whole thing, but I thought it's worth having a little read because I liked what they said. They said, Carol was an artistic genius whose kind and loving view of the world helped shape and define Sesame Street from its earliest days in 1969 through five decades. And his legacy here at Sesame Workshop and in cultural firmament will be unending. I agree. So his enormous talent and outsized heart were perfectly suited in playing the larger-than-life yellow bird who brought joy to generations of children and countless fans of all ages around the world. And his loving, cantankerous grouch gave us all permission to be cranky once in a while.
What a dude.
That's nice.
That was very nice.
They're two big cultural characters.
For sure.
In the world. Apart from Mr. Snuffleupagus, they were my two favourite characters in Sesame Street growing up. I liked Ernie and Bert, but those two, they were really different to each other.
That's a really good one. And they stood out from the rest.
Mm.
Big Bird was always such a beacon of hope. I guess you'd say, very, very bright and happy and helping out the friends and this sort of stuff. And Oscar.
Oscar. With his friend Slimy.
Yep.
Slimy?
I think so. Yeah,
the little worm. Yeah.
Mm. I was all about Grover.
Oh, Grover was great.
I didn't mind a bit of Telly either.
Do you know, I quite liked the humans on the show as well, like the people of the neighbourhood. They were all really, just lovely. It was such a – here in Australia, it worked really well. They had Sesame Street and then Play School straight after or before or whatever. And for kids growing up, they're perfect back-to-back programs. They're both teaching you things, and Sesame Street will have a place in everyone's heart forever, I think. So, yeah, very sad. What happier news have you found this week?
In some news that made me particularly happy, came out this morning, Adam Conover, who is the host of Adam Ruins Everything, he's announced that he's going to be hosting the new US version of The Crystal Maze for Nickelodeon. So that's the show that came back a year or two ago with Richard Ayoade hosting, and that was with celebrities and this sort of stuff. Back in the day, it was just normal people. In the States, they're going to do it for kids, and I think this is a perfect combination because there's a lot of, there's physical challenges, but there's also mental stuff that you've got to do. So he's going to test these kids pretty well.
They were some of my favorite kids' game shows growing up, those kind of programs where it's, I always wanted to be on them.
Mm-hmm.
And watching other kids be on them not only made me jealous, but I also got a lot of enjoyment watching it. So I think it's going to be a good show.
Yeah. And Shay will want to watch it. So yeah, I'm going to watch all of it. It'll be great.
Phone down for that one. Perfect. Well, we both know that Disney makes a lot of money.
Yes, this is true.
Disney has, I believe they broke their own record.
They do that.
This I couldn't believe, but Frozen has made so much money over the, it hasn't been out that long.
No, I think it's been out here a week and a half.
Bit longer in the US, yeah. I think. It's made over $900 million.
Are you surprised?
Yes and no. It's just there's so much money.
That's the biggest, for young girls, that's the biggest cultural event of the last decade.
True.
So, you know, Frozen 1 was 2012, I want to say. took him a while to get the next one out.
Mm.
And from all accounts, I haven't seen it yet. Shay has. And she loved it.
I reckon the biggest thing for the makers of Frozen would have been a follow-up song.
I imagine that's a big part of why they took a while to make sure that they're good. And the album, I think I saw Weezer is on the album. Maybe they're doing covers of some of the songs or something. I don't know, but yeah.
That's fun.
That's pretty cool. Disney's year is going really well. Do you want to know just how well?
It's going to hurt, but yes.
They, this year, have become the first studio to earn $10 billion at the box office.
Far out.
In 1 year.
So does that mean that we're not including Disney Plus? I mean, I know Disney Plus has only just started, but
this is theatrical release.
That's insane. I believe that doesn't include the amount that they're foreseeing that the Star Wars will make. I mean, that will tip them way over, I'm assuming.
I think it's including the pre-sales.
Okay.
Which is money that they already have in hand.
Yep.
But, you know, they've had Frozen 2, Lion King, Avengers Endgame. There's been a lot. Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel, Toy Story 4.
Yep.
Aladdin even. I mean, that made.
Dumbo. It's hard to keep track of just how much they've put out. And they own Fox.
So does that include, it must include Fox money. It has to.
Yeah, I think maybe May or something. I'm not sure where they're going to draw the line of this is now Disney's stuff.
Mm. Such a powerhouse. I know that they've had an exceptional year, like the movies that you listed then, kind of one-offs in that you're not going to get another Avengers Endgame.
No.
You're not going to get, well, I say this, but you're not going to get another Lion King, at least for another 20-odd years. So these kind of things are sort of one-offs. But I'm sure next year will be super successful for them as well.
I think it'll be interesting to see what the adjustment after Avengers as a brand sort of goes off to the side. If they're not racing towards doing more Avengers in the standalone, I'm sure they're preparing for a little bit of a dip. I think they also know that this is the last kind of big Star Wars pop they have for a while.
Yeah, they have said that they're going to ease back. At least on the film front.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they've got Jungle Cruise next year, which is sure to be a smash hit. You know, it looks Pirates of the Caribbean, starring The Rock and Emily Blunt. And she does great work for Disney.
Mary Poppins.
Exactly. And they've got The Little Mermaid in production.
That's right. They do too.
Which I think that's got the chance to be up there with the Beauty and the Beast and the Lion King remakes. The rest, Cinderella was pretty good, but the rest of them I haven't ranked quite as high.
Have they done a Snow White remake recently?
I don't think so.
It has to be coming.
I'm sure they'll do something, but there's also, I mean, there's
I reckon if you make it animated.
Oh, animated I can definitely see.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did Snow White and the Huntsman.
I did too.
And that had like Nick Frost and all these guys playing little people. But Disney tries to be a little bit more authentic sometimes. Mm. And I just, yeah.
May not be for that one.
And then do you update the names? Like is it still cool naming people after some of them character flaws?
Do you just...
Hey, this is Grumpy. I'm being far too PC with this, but people like to shake their fist at these Disney remakes. So that one I can see being tough.
But but at the same time, they're happy watching the old one as well.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
A very brief one. There's a new version of Around the World in 80 Days coming, which seems to happen every few years.
Yeah, I don't feel like it was that long ago we got the last one.
All I know is that David Tennant will be playing Phineas Fogg.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know how he hasn't played that character 14 times already.
So I don't know who it's for, but I'm going to assume BBC. Because that sounds like a BBC.
They'd love it.
If you were to put a word jumble together, David Tennant, Phineas Fogg, Around the World in 80 Days, the answer is BBC.
The answer is always BBC. I mean, they also did War of the Worlds recently, so that they're kind of into doing that stuff.
It's very, very serious.
Very serious. Oh, just a cool little tidbit, behind the scenes bit of trivia for people who are loving The Mandalorian as much as we both are. So they film at Manhattan Beach Studios in LA, and Mr. John himself, the big guy, I remember he played in the early 90s. He played Monica's boyfriend for a few episodes. He's gone from being an actor who's done bits to now being this powerhouse, and he's just, I don't know. I just think he's amazing. And also his show on Netflix, the cooking show, is pretty cool too.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know. Favreau.
Favreau. Oh, sorry. Yes. Sorry. Sorry.
That's okay. You said John. I was like, oh, I feel like you know this person.
Big, the big guy, John, you know, the big guy behind it all. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I've been loving him as well. I went back and rewatched I Love You, Man.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one with Paul Rudd and Jason Segel?
There's another one where the couples, it's with Vince Vaughn, they go couples on an retreat. Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch that one too.
I just mean I go back and watch that movie sometimes because at the same time, pretty much, the same year that Favreau directed Iron Man, he went and made I Love You, Man just for fun, and he plays a real dick and is clearly having a great time being awful.
Mm.
What a versatile guy. Just,
he mustn't sleep, right? Like he can't – he mustn't sleep or have days off.
Well, I think acting for him – might be his days off because, you know, he's been busy doing The Lion King.
Yes.
But he's still found time to go and be in Spider-Man Far From Home and knock around in Europe with Spidey.
And do that whole Chef's whatever it was called.
Yep.
I watched that whole series in like
a day. There's a new series now.
I will watch that. I definitely will. But anyway, he said about The Mandalorian, it was filmed on a large soundstage with a full ceiling, 360-degree view. He said, they changed the environments every day. Sometimes it's a spaceship, sometimes it's a desert, ice or mud. He said there's limited location work on the series, but it's all within LA, in the LA area. So when they go all over the world to Iceland or Chile to do these sort of asset shoots, the actors are never there. They're always just in LA. And he said the location is brought to the actors. I mean, surely that it doesn't seem as grand a scale as something like Game of Thrones or something in terms of location shoots. But damn, it works.
Yep. It's almost like they perfected what George Lucas was trying to do with the prequels.
Yeah.
Filming everything green screen. He just didn't have the tech yet.
No. And it just works so well. And they can go to a different planet every week and for us all to go, look at the deserts, and not for one second assume that the actors, or the characters, I should say, are not within that world.
Yeah, that's very true.
Mm, it's cool.
Answering writers' pup patrol distress calls like a pro. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
A very brief one. They announced a few years ago that there was a theme park going to come to the heart of London. I don't know exactly where, but I think somewhere near Wimbledon.
Okay.
The reason why I say that is because they keep talking about the fact that it's the size of 40 Wimbledons or something.
And Wimbledon are like, you can't have us.
Mm. But it's a reasonable size thing. Anyway, for a while there it was going to be called Paramount Park. And then in 2017, Paramount pulled out. I can't remember why, but they've recently come back in and I think there's parent companies that are pushing together and stuff. However, the reason why they've announced it's now called the London Resort and it's going to be a two-stage theme park of six lands. First stage opening in 2024, and it's going to have hotels and all this sort of stuff. And the six lands, it's very strange because they've announced them, and the future land is called Spaceport or Starport.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the press release, it talks about that this area is set in the 23rd century. And I don't know how much Paramount are back on board because for ages that was going to be Star Trek land.
Oh, okay.
And why you don't announce that as Star Trek land?
Yeah, that seems
very odd.
It seems like there's been an issue, so they're not calling it Star Trek land because they don't have the rights to Star Trek.
Paramount still has the rights for them, so it's very confusing. I'm sure there'll be plenty more news to come.
It might change.
This sort of stuff, and
it'll
go back and forth.
Yeah,
but even in the press release images that they put out of the park, the area called Studio Land, you know, behind the scenes studio tours and stuff, has the big Paramount Pictures.
Okay. So they're definitely
like Studio Gate.
Is it just really early days?
I don't think so. Because as I said, it's been floating around for long, long time. But the reason why I think it's going to happen. It's got Q80 money behind it.
Mm.
And when they want something done, it happens.
Yeah, right, okay.
So there's a big, big push to get this done.
Okay. When it happens, you'll just have to go and check it out for us.
Damn straight I will. Some of these photos were amazing. There was a roller coaster going through an old castle.
Oh, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
Like Harry Potter style without calling it Harry Potter.
Yes. So there was an area called The Woods, which is all around fantasy stuff.
Yep.
and then there was a jungle or the wilds or something like that. I think that's Mesopotamian or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. The Starport studio, and then I can't remember the other two were. Not Wild West or anything like that. It was quite British.
If it's Wild West, they're going to try and call it Westworld.
Sure. Yeah.
Look, and then it gets very different.
Some of the stuff looked very English.
Oh, so we go out into the forest.
Well, they've got a cool chance because, you know, England has Thorpe Park, Alton Towers, this sort of stuff. It has theme parks that are designed for British people. But to have something in the middle of London that is clearly catering towards tourists, then they've got to have stuff that's heightened,
for both.
Heightened reality England.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah, the way Disney does Main Street. So you walk in, it's like, wow, this feels like 1950s America or even earlier, that sort of thing. I think they've got to throw in that sort of stuff. You know, you've got to have stuff that looks like Mary Poppins and somewhere to go and eat a pie with a beer, a warm beer.
Have some scones. Sorry, scones.
Sassier than Peppa Pig. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Hey, so the Golden Globes nominees were announced this week.
Did you get up early for that? Or?
Oh, of course I did. Woke up at the crack of dawn and looked at it.
Good.
So the interesting thing I thought was that I'm going to read you the Best Motion Picture Drama nominees.
Okay.
Irishman, Marriage Story, 1917, Joker, The Two Popes. Irishman, Marriage Story, and The Two Popes are all Netflix films. Mm. Three out of the five Best Motion Picture nominees are from Netflix.
It's a big call.
It's a huge call, isn't it?
I'm sure Adam Sandler's not rapt about that.
Yeah, I know, right? And it looks like everybody who had anything to do with Marriage Story are nominated for things. You've got Scarlett Johansson, Adam Driver. I saw Laura Dern was nominated. But one interesting thing I saw was that, so it's for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones wrapped up this year.
Yep.
They got one nomination. It was Best Actor for Kit Harington.
Bold.
Jon Snow, who spent the whole time going, I don't want it, I don't want it. To me, it kind of feels like there were so many other people that had to work harder to make their roles work.
Yeah.
I mean, the one that comes to my mind is Emilia Clarke. Like, she had to make Daenerys, who was a fan favorite. She had to try and make Daenerys turn evil, but without any words. She wasn't given the words. So she had to do, I mean, she had a couple of those facial expressions she had to do, particularly when she was sitting on top of King's Landing, looking down, and suddenly she was like, I've done it. Holy crap, I've done it. I've got to switch now. Like, that was all on her. And for her not to get a nomination, I'm sure she doesn't care. But if you're going to give the show only one nomination.
Brienne.
Yes.
Because my take is Golden Globes, you've got to have that one flashy scene because that's all the time you get to impress judges, this sort of stuff. You think of those scenes around the fire.
It's giving me chills in the back of my neck thinking about.
That's your submission.
That face that she had.
What's Jon Snow's, what's his moment?
What are you going to give him? Are you going to give him when he is on a dragon, when the dragons are behind him and Daenerys?
It's a well done on 8 years' work.
I guess. I just think there's so many other people that could have gotten it, like special effects people. They work bloody hard. Made it dark, but they made it bloody hard. An interesting look at how the Emmys and the Golden Globes treated the end of Game of Thrones.
The one Golden Globe or whatever, I don't care where, but someone somewhere has to nominate and hopefully win for best short form comedy has to be The Lonely Island.
With that, that was pretty impressive.
With the unauthorized Bash Brothers experience.
Mm.
That's still my take for best
short
form Netflix or streaming or anything.
Just anything.
Just anything.
Yeah, so Golden Globes, there'll be so much more to talk about as it gears up. But
and I looked at the lineup and I won't probably watch because nothing I watch is nominated. And I'm not saying that like, but I just mean I watch a lot of things. And if you've got a full awards lineup and I've not watched stuff, maybe that's my taste. Yes.
Maybe, yeah.
But maybe it's also
I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah,
because there's stuff here that I'm looking at, like there's Christina Applegate watched. For Dead to Me. Like that was a funny show from Netflix that I'd forgotten about. Russian Doll.
Sure.
Fleabag is nominated. I mean, if it's anything like what we saw in the Emmys, that'll win for everything. Yeah. But yeah, I think there's more sort of serious drama stuff that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't go for the dramedy. Then just don't go for the straight comedy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Should we get into trailers?
Yes, please.
Some good trailers this week.
There have been so many. I was really stoked by plenty.
All right, let's have a look at your favourite one.
Oh, that's okay. Rather than favourite, I have to put two together.
Okay.
Now, one, it was a really good week to be a Ryan Reynolds fan.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was we've seen a trailer before for Underground 6, which is the Netflix movie coming at the end of the year. There was a new trailer that was put out showing it was basically Ryan Reynolds talking into camera explaining that they'd used science to prove that this is the most Michael Bay movie that Michael Bay's ever made. And it's like a minute and a half thing of breaking down the actual science of why this is the most jacked up Michael Bay thing ever. And it just sold me on it completely.
And also you couldn't argue with it.
You can't, but he also points out these things. Like, you know, a lot of people thought the Bayhem peaked in the early 90s with Bad Boys, or maybe in the noughties with Transformers, mm-hmm. but they just didn't have the technology to measure it properly at the time. So that was a really strong trailer. And I'm amped for that. But then I think it was a day or two ago, they dropped the trailer for Free Guy, which we've talked about on this show mm-hmm. before. I've been following that for a while because that sounds like my jam. And then when we saw that trailer, that movie is my jam.
So what it seemed to me, I quite enjoyed the way they did the trailer, the reveal, because it felt very like within the first minute, you got a real sort of Truman Show vibe where you're like,
something's not quite right here.
Yeah, and then suddenly they dropped the reveal that clearly they didn't care was going to be the twist. They want you to know that that's the twist, that it's actually he's in a video game.
He's the guy that you run over in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah. And because of that, it gave me real just before like Thursday Next book vibes.
Sure.
Because you spend a lot of time with her visiting characters in books between the reader reading it. It's very weird, but it's just like this. And Ryan Reynolds is just perfect for this.
He's claiming that it might be his favourite movie he's made yet.
Really?
Which is a very big call.
Okay. That is a big call. I thought Jodie Comer was pretty cool in it.
Yeah.
Doing a different sort of accent. I wish she would just do her own accent because it's brilliant. It's so thick. But she's got a very terribly posh English accent on for this one. But I think their chemistry sort of shone through in the trailer.
Digging around for some Glock.
Yeah, it's two Glocks. Okay.
Yeah. So I thought that was really strong.
Agreed.
My next one down, I'm going to say The Boys. There was a very brief trailer for season 2 with virtually no talking. It was just all imagery of stuff to come and a lot of it very out of context, but
so how long was this trailer?
It was about a minute.
That's a fair while.
Yeah.
For that and sort of trailer.
Lots of music and emotion and this sort of stuff building it and things, but everyone you like is back. Even the people that had been flicked off the team at the end of last season from the 7, this sort of stuff, it looks like we're going to check in and see what's going on with everybody.
Mm.
There's plenty of new characters and it looks hyper violent again. So,
which is what made it a success, or part of what made it a success.
Yeah.
So why stop that from happening?
So there's no firm date on when that's back, but
when did the first one?
It dropped on Comic-Con.
Okay, all right.
So that would July. It makes a lot of sense because they can hype it like crazy at the event, and they can run around yelling out "fuck supers" because that's the show's tagline, and no one can stop them.
Sorry, we're just quoting.
Free speech.
Quoting.
They're the ones who knock. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
The next one, Black Widow.
Mm.
Very amped with that. I'm still a bit, I don't know exactly when this is set. They've told us this is set after Civil War when she helps Captain America and stuff and then has to go on the run herself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I fully believe it.
But there's a fair bit of origin stuff in there as well.
There's a lot of origin stuff. We're going to see stuff from the Red Room where she was trained. We see Yelena, which was another one of the girls through that program, is Florence Pugh.
I can't ever say Nightingale.
No, yeah. And David Harbour as Red Guardian, who's awesome Russian superhero. And I like that they've given him full dad bod and let him be washed up.
He looks like the answer to the question at the end of Stranger Things season 3.
Oh, sure.
You're like, oh.
Okay, that's what he was doing in a Russian jail.
You're like, oh, okay, I get it.
I am kind of not worried, but there's a good chance that he may become like a weird, overweight Russian stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
Come now, we drink. We drink before fight.
Vodka.
Yeah. But there was some shots of Taskmaster. We still don't know exactly who's playing that, who is under the mask. But there was one shot that had me go, because we saw William Hurt,
mm-hmm.
who has been Thunderbolt Ross chasing down the Hulk, and he's popped up in some of the Avengers movies and Iron Man movies and this sort of stuff, generally in an antagonistic role. And if he's representing the government and she's on the run from the government, I don't know where this fits, because they've de-aged him in this trailer. But they've de-aged.
They love doing that.
Well, they've de-aged him younger than when he was in Hulk, like in Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton, which is also where he first met Iron Man. That's where he first came into this whole thing of superheroes. So if this is before that, I don't know where this fits.
But also you have to remember that Marvel are very good at throwing in things that don't exist in the film into the trailers.
They also have characters that are really green aliens that can shape change into other people's forms. So there's so many things it could be, and it's probably just in there as a red herring for people like me.
Yeah. They gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Wonder Woman 1984 dropped yesterday. That looks pretty funky fun.
I enjoyed the music that they put behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the soundtrack seem like it's going to be very solid, because they're clearly going to grab actual 1980s huge hits.
Yes, and our boy Mando is ripping it up as the very charming looking Maxwell Lord.
Mr. Pedro's a very busy man.
Isn't he just?
He really is. I think this movie the trailer makes the movie look really good. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm still reserving judgment. I enjoy the first one enough. Some of the trailers hyped it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. If this feels like it's got the potential to be a Guardians.
Yeah, it does.
Musical vibe.
Are you happy with that?
That makes me really happy. That sells me further on it. I'm not 100% sold on Kristen Wiig as Cheetah yet, because we haven't seen much of, and what we have was like, so in the comics, she's a half cheetah woman type thing, or like finds a stone and gets imbued with a cheetah god. And
it happens all the time,
doesn't it? Mm. In what we've seen so far, it's just her wearing a cheetah print jacket, which I don't know.
It's very 80s.
It's very 80s. And I love her and she does great work, but it just makes me worried about Ghostbusters of like just not quite right tone.
I wonder if they're showing the real Kristen Wiig aspects in the trailer.
Sure.
Just and hiding the rest of it. It could happen. I did like the little joke at the end where they were looking and Wonder Woman says, everything here is art. And then he starts staring at a bin and she goes, no, that's just a garbage bin. You say, oh, it's a garbage bin. Okay. Yeah. Well, that was quite fun. And Ghostbusters trailer.
Ghostbusters Afterlife. That's a pretty cool name. And the trailer answered a lot of the questions we had very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
How does it tie back to the others? These kids are Egon's grandkids.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd is their science teacher.
Love it.
Ghostbusters fanboy. So does that mean that Paul Rudd is kind of like Lewis Tully?
That's what I'm thinking. I think he's swept up in it and they will have to save him from himself.
So does that make him Tully mixed with Zedmore?
Yeah.
Like he's a bit of Winston.
He's a bit of Winston.
He's the outsider. Oh, I don't know. Finn Wolfhard.
Of course they got Finn.
He's popular
for
this sort of thing. And I can, if you squint, in the same way that you can see Bill Hader being him older,
mm-hmm.
you can squint and see Harold Ramis, him being much older.
Mm. Yeah. Good squinting
Thank you.
I'm
squinting my best.
It's very impressive. What I like about it is that they've made the setting very different. It's no longer in a New York type place. Mm. It's out in the countryside. And they've got a spooky sort of haunted house looking thing.
Oh, there's going to be a scarecrow.
Oh, that would be brilliant.
There's going to be something with a thresher, I imagine, being a haunted thresher. Because they showed
coming
them,
at us or at them.
They were driving through those wheat fields. So there's going to be some sort of thresher because that's a scary kit.
Yeah, that is quite scary.
What else can you see out there?
I can see the John Belushi ghost.
Like the Slimer?
Yep. He has to make an appearance. I think he's going to make an appearance within the town itself because they showed a few little shops. He'll be in one of the shops eating.
Yep.
That'll be good fun.
There needs to be some sort of poor joke about cow. Like a cow goes past and says moo and then a ghost straight after says boo. Or whether they merge and it's a moo-boo or something.
A moo-boo.
But that's low-hanging fruit.
I do like the fact that it's in a well. Like the weird thing that comes out is in a well.
It's got to be a well.
Got a lot of time for that.
Yeah.
A lot of time for it.
Yes, we really quacked at the principal. Are we ducks or what? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Well, first off, I think we'll crack into the watching suggestions.
Yes.
But this is a listener watching suggestion.
Okay.
So Debbie from Florida said, you guys were talking about the new L Word Generation Q last week and I thought I'd give you my first impressions. First up, I thought it was pretty good. It's too early to tell how good the season will turn out because we've only just been introduced to a whole lot of new characters. The show smells like Melrose Place in reference to the new cast. One seems like she's trying a little too hard, the one that resembles a new version of Shane. One seems like a modernized Bette. The others I haven't formed an opinion of yet. It certainly helps having some of the old cast, and we are hoping that others may pop up in episodes to come. I'll probably watch the whole season unless the storyline gets terrible. So there you go.
Nice. Cheers, Debbie.
I thought that was interesting that she said that there's two new characters
mm-hmm.
that are sort of like a newer version of two of the original characters, yet I know because I've seen the ad, Shane and Bette are both in this show, so you got two versions of the same character.
How odd.
Maybe they're not going to be in it all the time. I don't know.
Flashbacks.
Ooh, yes. That's a watching suggestion if you ever liked the L Word. It seems like it's worth, at least the first episode's worth a watch. What have you watched?
I've been watching Making It.
Oh, yes, you have.
It's back. There have been four episodes thus far. I'm not going to say who goes well in all of them, but it's as charming as it's ever been. Filled with positivity and just lovely people doing some really creative stuff. They've got a science maker this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy who, like, builds internal structure stuff for planes and
very
NASA
clever man.
And this sort of stuff. And his stuff is on a different level. Mm. Like everyone doing stuff is a mate. There's one woman who is a balloon expert.
Oh, wow.
And the stuff she does with balloons is mind-blowing.
Is she doing like balloon animal kind of stuff or next level?
Next level. Like she uses wood to build signs and then creates openings in the signs and then crushes balloons together so they completely fill out and like won't pop.
That's witchcraft right
it's,
there.
It's crazy stuff. And then there's one woman that is all about recycled objects and stuff like this. So she builds a portrait of her father, a 3D portrait of his face, by sticking together like 800 paintbrushes, wide house painting brushes, and trimming the bristles to form the contours of her father's face.
Oh, humans are remarkable.
So there's crazy stuff like that, but then there's also people that are doing stuff that's really inspiring of like, I could do that.
Mm.
I see how you've done that. And you can go onto their website and download the item, you know, the ingredients, instructions,
that's a great
stuff afterwards.
Idea.
But there's stuff on there that you see that I genuinely can do that.
Yeah. Amy Poehler still?
Oh, yeah. Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman hosting.
Brilliant.
One of the contestants is a 19-year-old, very young, eager guy who is a big, big fan of Nick Offerman. and makes it quite clear.
Okay.
And it's very funny. He's also a big fan of The Good Place.
Oh,
gotta look. I'm not going to say any more than that.
All right.
But maybe there's something where someone has to do something involving something I love.
This sounds like a fantastic show to watch in the lead up to the Christmas season.
It so is.
Because of the positivity.
It has coupled nicely with Santa's Blizzard Bake Off, or whatever that one, the cooking one is.
Yeah. And then, like we said last week, just go over to Nailed at Christmas or Holiday, they call it. Yep. Special season.
So that's been lovely.
Oh, that sounds like a lovely show.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
What have I been watching? So I watched Encore, that show on Disney Plus that Chris and...
Yes, about the singing, bringing people back together, right?
Yeah, so I watched the one that was the Annie special. So it was the class of, I can't remember, like class of 98 or something like that. And they had performed Annie at their high school. It was like the High School Musical.
Yes.
And then this show, Encore, gets them back reunited again, the main cast, and this time they've got a proper, like, actual Broadway director. They've got choreographer, live, like, musicians. They've got professional actors who are also on stage with them, who are sort of playing the backing, sort of small ensemble crowd sort of thing. And it's amazing because it's like a school reunion for them, but it's also a chance to do something that was clearly, for a lot of them, one of the highlights of their high school lives.
Sure.
And what I thought was interesting was that the stories and the world that these teenagers, you know, back then had between each other and their own private lives sort of intertwined into the musical. Like the guy that played Daddy Warbucks, when it came time for him to wear, like this is now in 2019, when it came time for him to either wear a wig that would show, you know, like a skull wig, bald wig, or to shave his hair, he got really emotional. And you're like, why is he really emotional about his hair? And then there's this whole story that happened back when he was in the original Annie that makes you go, oh, wow, like that's a lot for a kid to be doing, having to deal with, and also doing a musical. There's the woman who is Annie, went from high school to wanting to get into Broadway musicals, and it never quite happened for her. Mm-hmm. And she ended up, you know, falling in love and moving back to her hometown. So for her, being able to sing in front of a Broadway director was like amazing for her. It's such a feel-good thing. And I know that that's what Disney's about, but it's a really feel-good show to watch. And like I said, with making it, it's a great show to get into in the lead up to Christmas because it's all about positivity. Good show.
We're in a positive tip.
We really
today,
are.
And I'm going to keep it going. Because,
oh, I'm going to break it later.
Oh. Actually, I will too.
Okay.
The first two episodes of Joe Pera Talks to You.
Oh, yeah.
Ed, which I talked at length about last week and stuff with positivity. So it's a little more serialized than it was before in a great way. The first episode is called Joe Pera Talks to You About Beans.
About beans. Like dry beans or?
Beans. All sorts of beans.
Oh, great. The whole plethora of beans.
Well, he talks about that sort of stuff and then reveals that his intention is that there's going to be, I think, 14 episodes of the show over summer in the States, and he's just planted a bean arch.
Oh, yeah. So he's going to grow the beans.
So they grow up
over
and they'll meet at the top, and then he can walk underneath and pick the beans without having to bend over. And it should take 58 to 63 days, which is exactly the length of the season of the TV show. And so each episode we're going to be checking in to see how his beans are growing.
And how have they been going?
Pretty well.
That's brilliant.
And some of his neighbours and stuff are really on board. His best friend is like, I'm really proud of you for doing this, Joe. You've done a great job. And everyone's really supportive of him for it. And the second episode is Joe Pera takes you for a walk. And it's
just around the neighborhood?
He takes you hiking.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
This is the show you watch before you go to bed, right?
Oh, yeah. Hmm. The dude that made it, his whole thing is like, I wanted to make a show that's really relaxing and is the best thing to watch before to go to bed. Yeah. I have a very relaxing voice and I like to talk about positive things in a very calm nature. He's like, hello, I'm Joe Pera. This week I'll be taking you walking through the bush near my home.
Hmm.
I've recently gone through some traumatic emotional moments that I would declare it about a DEFCON 1. However, half an hour walking quietly seems to have calmed me enough to talk. And it, like, that's his vibe. And I don't know why it's so funny to me, but I piss myself laughing. and everyone is so nice and warm. And he's just, you know, he's the high school choir coach. And just everything he does is really nice. He's supportive of everyone sort of stuff. And it's such a lovely show.
Do you think you'd do a Christmas special?
No.
It's not going to happen?
No.
Okay.
Because it's this weird thing of it's set in the summer over there, but they're showing it in their winter and stuff.
Very confusing.
They're the real killers who turn the lights off on Tony Soprano. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I think I'm going to break the good vibes now. I sat down and watched Marriage Story from Netflix that has been nominated for a whole heap of Golden Globes. Adam Driver, Scarlett Johansson, Laura Dern's in it. And it's about a couple that are going through the separation and into divorce.
Right.
And it's very sad. There's no bad guy. There's no one doing this. It's all very grey, as in, yeah, he may have done this, she may have done that, but neither were really bad things. They're just two people that don't want or need to be together anymore. And things get a bit messy. And then you feel sorry for her and then you feel sorry for him. And then you understand why she's done that and you understand why he feels like that way. And then at the end, you just feel really drained.
Sure.
I must say, their performances were fantastic. Laura Dern is amazing as well. But sometimes when they were saying things, you're like, that's a strange thing to say in reaction to what that person just said. I think sometimes the script was a bit odd, but their performances were phenomenal.
Okay.
But if you are thinking of going through a divorce, are in the middle of a divorce, have just finished going through a divorce, or if you're like the child of a divorce that was recent, you may not want to watch it.
What about if you just don't like the idea of divorce?
You may not want to watch it.
Yeah, because, I mean, all you did was just solidified things for me. I saw the listing for that. I was like, nah. So the trailer for that, I was like, nah. And then what you've said there, no.
It's a lot.
There are films that I put in that sort of bucket. Like, I know there are plenty of people that do enjoy watching them. But I can't watch stuff like that because, like as you said, it stays with you.
It stays with you. It does. And I know that people – this is going to be weird, comparing it to horror films. But people like watching horror films because they like the scares.
Mm-hmm.
They like feeling scared. It's the adrenaline rush. People like watching these films because they like to feel. And I understand that. But I don't want to feel like that. Like I said, I'm very happy that I watched it because the performances were phenomenal, but it's definitely not something I'm watching twice.
Sure.
Because I feel drained after it. Like I went to bed and went, maybe I should listen to a fun podcast. Yeah. I should have watched Joe Pera.
Yep.
I should have watched him afterwards.
Yep.
Because it's on Netflix, it's there for you to watch whenever you like, but just be warned.
It's there for you to watch. It's not going to shove in my algorithm ever.
It's definitely not a love story. It's a love story of sorts, but it's not a romantic love story. Anyway, got a quiz coming up for us very soon. Do you want to bring this up or down?
It's a conflicting emotion one.
Mm-hmm.
So Crisis kicked off this week. Crisis on Infinite Earths, the big crossover of Flash, Arrow, Batwoman, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow.
Mm.
We don't get the Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow episodes until next year. They come in early January, which is weird splitting up the thing. But however,
they've done that.
Supergirl episode hit last night. And they were like, they've been saying for over a year, high stakes, high stakes. Wow.
So oh, really?
The episode begins with shots. Like this show is Avengers Endgame level for TV. So it starts with flicking through different universes showing them dying. And the first one it starts with is the 1989 Batman Michael Keaton movies. Of it has the journalist from that movie look like holding a 1989 newspaper looking up at the sky turning red and saying, like, the bat signal goes out, like, I hope you're there, big guy. And then,
jeez.
And then The Titans, which is a show on DC Universe, nothing to do with the CW. Two of those characters appear and look up and basically go off, and then their universe wipes out. Earth X, which is one of the crossover ones from a few years that the animated shows have been in, gets wiped out straight away. Then there's Burt Ward, who played Robin on the 1966 old Batman, walking down the street, walking Ace the Bat Hound. And he looks up and says, "Holy crimson skies of death!" And then that's the beginning of the thing. And his, like, that Batman world blows up.
Wow.
So just, like, all these worlds are being wiped out. And then, so it's the Supergirl episode. We get a bit more time with some of the Supergirl ancillary characters and this sort of stuff. But, like, Superman, he's off on another planet with Lois, with the Kryptonian people that are alive. And they get wiped out. And they have to put their son on a spaceship and shoot it off in the exact same way. That Superman origin story happened. All this stuff that's really cool. It was heavy with that many people dying, but it was the audaciousness of this, of how much they're tying in. I can't wait for tonight's episode. So Brandon Routh is already on Legends of Tomorrow. He plays Ray the Atom. He has a suit like Iron Man type of thing, but he can shrink.
Okay.
He also played Superman in the 2006 movie.
I thought I knew the name.
So he's going to be playing Superman tonight as well.
I have seen him dressed up as this, yep.
And Kevin Conroy, who's the voice of Batman in all the animated shows and the games, will be playing Old Man Bruce. So this is Batman, like, in a full, I don't even know what you'd call it, the sort of thing, if you break your neck and you get metal rods put on the outside so you can't, like a restraint harness type thing. He's in like a suit, a mobility suit type thing so he can move, and playing old Batman type of thing.
It's full on.
Awesome.
Do you think he's going to get a phone call and on the other end will be Mark Hamill's Joker?
It wouldn't surprise me if they sneak him in there somewhere. The one I'm waiting to see, Nicolas Cage.
Really?
Yep.
You reckon they get him?
All he's ever wanted to do is play Superman. And you've seen those photos of him for the Tim Burton Superman.
Mm.
So there's been rumors, tiny rumors, but like they've been saying for years that that's their dream get. If they could have anyone drop in for a Superman cameo, because, you know, Dean Cain has said no.
Mm.
He's not back. But Tom Welling, who was Superman on Smallville, he's going to be on tonight as well.
Cool.
So there's going to be multiple Supermans at the same time and all this
stuff. So weird. It's so weird.
The thing that I'm dancing around, because I've only seen episode one of the five, is that this episode ends with what they've been saying is going to happen to Green Arrow for a long time.
Right.
But it happens on Supergirl. He saves a billion, like literally a billion people. There's an Earth that is dying. They have a portal set up and they're sucking ships through, and he stays behind to hold off. One guy, not even a super, he's not a Superman or anything. He's a dude with a bow and arrow. He sees himself as a murderer dressed in a costume. He stays behind and a billion people get through before he does not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was this just like an hour episode?
Yep.
That's a lot.
It was breakneck. It does not slow down at all.
It's the kind of episode you probably need to watch a couple of times then.
That's where I'm of, like, your thing, you don't need to watch that marriage stuff again.
Yep.
I finished this episode and was straight away like, man, I need to watch that again.
Yeah.
It's not up on iTunes, I haven't been able to see it, but Kevin Smith is hosting an after show, Crisis Aftermath.
He'd be good.
I'm sure it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, he's into that sort of stuff.
But yeah, Batwoman tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Flash the night after. Might be Arrow, one or the other. But, man, stakes are high and people are going, like, big characters. This is going to be a big line-wide reboot for a lot of them. I'm not sure when he's coming in, but I know Black Lightning, who is on he's in a different universe. He's getting folded in, all this sort of stuff. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Just Just meanwhile, that's a logistical nightmare for like the lawyers and stuff, the negotiators, the producers.
That's the thing that's so impressive. There's stuff here that I don't know how they got the rights approval for, because, you know, Smallville's off there. You've got animated series. You've like, getting the 1966 Batman stuff is impossible. Getting the Michael Keaton Batman stuff, that's been off limits completely.
Bizarre.
It's so cool. It's just impressive. They've called in every favor, and they're just like, this is our chance to do Endgame, but for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Let's forget that we're on a TV budget and go all out. It's, as you say, the logistics of it and stuff. It's been interesting watching Flash, Arrow over the last few weeks, the way that a lot of what you consider maybe a C-tier character have been elevated to have a storyline, so a lot of the B-tier characters can go off and film to be in the crossover.
Right.
So like Elongated Man on Flash, who's been a big character for the last 2 years, has been noticeably nowhere for the last two and a half episodes. So he's clearly got a big part to play in the crossover.
It's
the logistics of this is insane.
And the secrets behind, like having to, very big.
And secrets is a good way to put it. I've not even touched on a lot of the stuff that gets revealed in this episode. There's some mighty fine big twists.
Cool.
Yeah. So I cannot wait until about 7 o'clock tonight when the next one drops on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you'll be busy. Headphones in, don't even speak.
And then we get another one tomorrow night, and then I fully intend to watch all three back to back before the other two drop next year.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. Mandalorian.
Mando.
We went to a place we've been to before.
It was very fan servicey this episode. I was half expecting that we would go past a Sarlacc pit, or that we might see something to do with Jabba.
Baby Jabba.
Baby Jabba. It's going to happen.
Yeah, but we didn't get it that time.
You know what we did get? Amy Sedaris.
What was that about?
I mean, I loved it.
It was amazing.
It was so good. But, you know, it's like having Pillboy, or it's weird. You know, you've ticked someone's dream box here. Like in the first episode when Brian Posehn was the land speeder pilot. Mm. It's just, okay.
It had a touch of Sigourney Weaver in Alien, the first movie, but like her sister.
That hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the Ripley who stayed behind.
That's right. What I find phenomenal is that we and the Mandalorian know that everybody's after Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
But he'll just leave her, or him, it, with random people and everything's fine.
Well, I guess he kind of knows that if anyone messes up, he can just go and kill them. He seems pretty adept. But you're right.
Good.
He's not a good parent.
No, he's not. Kid.
He's trying not to get attached.
I know, but it's clear he's been attached since day one. What do you think about the assassin?
Mulan.
What do you reckon at the end?
Oh, who came? Because the assassin, that's Ming-Na Wan from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Mulan and this sort of stuff. So that at the end, a lot of people are like, oh, my God, it's wearing spurs. It's got to be Boba Fett. Nah. It's either going to be Werner Herzog from like the guy that set him out at the beginning, or I can never pronounce it, Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad. The dude that was Gus.
Oh, right.
I know he's on the show. He's in the cast list at some point. In the same way that everyone else.
I didn't know that.
When they announce everyone that's on the show, you're like, oh, wow, that's a lot of people to have on every episode. And instead it's spending one with one. I think that he may be some sort of Imperial or ex-Imperial officer.
What if they don't show Boba Fett till season two?
I would rather they don't show Boba Fett at all.
He doesn't need to be there?
The second Boba is there, Mando is lessened.
That's true.
Because that's the one people want Boba. And if you put Boba there, you've either got to make Mando much better than Boba, which devalues Boba, which people won't appreciate, or you stick to what the canon is, that Boba is better and then our protagonist is not as good anymore.
That's a good point. I spent a while yesterday listening to the Mandalorian soundtrack, and I'm not angry with myself. I've had the theme song stuck in my head for 2 days now, so happy with it. Something about it. It's got a relaxing sound. Like, Star Wars music is very dramatic and powerful and it gets you going. And this one is more sort of relaxed, but at the same time has a bit of energy to it.
Yeah. Yes. It's a bit of a jam.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. Yeah, brilliant. Da, 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 da. I am very happy once again that this is on in the lead up to Christmas as well, because it just has me so happy. I got a friend who is obsessed with Baby Yoda, yet hasn't seen the show yet.
Is that Abe?
No, it's not Abe. Oh, as if he wouldn't have. He's been watching it. You know he's been watching it.
I don't know.
We'll have to ask him later. Spoiler for later episodes. Are you ready for a quiz?
Yes, please.
This one is like I said, you can do a bit of a guessing game to this one. It's called How Many Kids? You have to tell me how many kids these fictional families had.
Gosh, all right. How many kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many kids?
All right, the Starks from Game of Thrones.
So you're going to trip me up on a technicality here.
Yeah, but I'm allowing the technicality if you need to have it there.
All right, let's work down. We've got John, Rob, Sansa, Arya, Brandon, and the other one.
Rickon.
Rickon.
Yeah.
There you go. Is that everyone?
Yeah. So I was going to allow.
Six.
That's right. I was going to allow John until a certain series. And then it drops back. So he's kind of like a half.
Sure. And then I guess Theon would kind of.
Yeah, that's true.
Sit in that nebulous as well. It's anyway, hard, that's a good question.
But you answered what you mean. You gave all the names.
Guess,
so
guess. Guess. Good,
yeah, it's just
good,
a guessing
good.
One. What about the Weasleys?
The Weasleys.
From
Ooh,
Harry Potter.
Oh, okay. See, this is one I have to do backwards in my head. Six. Seven.
Seven. Did you nearly forget Ron?
Nope. Nearly forgot fucking Percy.
Ah, yes. Ron, Bill, Charlie, Percy, Fred, George and Ginny.
Yep. Nice.
Back to the Future's McFlies. The original movie.
Two.
Got to think of that picture that Marty had.
Mm.
The photo he had that Ken, where he.
Three.
Yeah, it was three. And I found out their names, Dave and Linda.
Dave and Linda.
Marty was the youngest. Pretty sure Dave was the oldest.
Dave.
Didn't he have like a Mickey Mouse t-shirt on in the photo and jean shorts? Yeah.
I want jean shorts to come back. Not jorts. Not I don't need
you
short
don't want,
shorts.
But what about like three-quarter ones?
Oh,
you know, like Kevin Smith sort of ones.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah,
the ones you want.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
I'm sick of tight fit jeans and all this sort of stuff. Like, I've lost some weight. It's great. I've had to buy new clothes.
You've lost a lot of weight this year.
Thank you. I've lost, I needed to buy new clothes. I hate buying new pants because there was, let's get the skinny ones. Like, I lost weight so I could be skinnier, not to wear skinnier pants. I want loose clothes.
Skinny pants were not your motive.
No. I lost a lot of weight. I'm still wearing double XL shirts because I like my stuff baggy.
Yeah, fair enough.
Kevin Smith, least, great description of shorts. That's the perfect way to say it.
They're the ones you want. What am I up to? Three. Wonder Years. The Arnolds.
I want to say two, but I know I'm wrong. I can't remember.
Three. There was Karen, who ended up being with Ross from Friends in the show.
Right.
Ross was the boyfriend. Wayne was the bully brother. And Kevin. Yeah, Wayne.
I should have just said three. Three is always going to be the default.
It's almost always three. Do you know what? Wayne, for some reason, at one point had a mullet. And I know because it was filmed at a certain time, but it was also set at a different time when mullets shouldn't have been a thing.
Sure.
But he sported a mullet for a while. Don't know how he got away with that. What about Married with Children?
Two.
Mm.
Bud and Christina Applegate.
Yeah, Kelly.
Kelly.
Yeah. And finally...
Sorry, I just have to say, Bud, what's his name?
David
Faustino.
Yep.
He's a fantastic rapper.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
I do remember him wearing keppers, so that makes sense.
He like runs an underground hip-hop battle night of like freestyling and is an absolute demon. I've watched stuff of his and just he rips people apart. Like roast battle style.
Mm.
He does comedy rap stuff and just... Bud Bundy.
I would imagine that's what Bud Bundy would have wanted to be, but Bud Bundy wasn't talented.
No.
Where Dave clearly is.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Sound of Music. The Von Trapps.
Six.
Real family too. You're close. It was seven. Liesl, Frederick, Louisa, Kurt, Brigitte, Marta.
Of course Gretel. It is because of Do, Re, Mi, Fa, So, La, Ti, back to I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. That yeah. was shooting myself in the foot.
You know, I went to Salzburg and I went on the Sound of Music tour and you got to drive past the places where they were like hanging out of the trees, the pagoda things, what are they called?
Is that an outdoor covered area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where she was like, I am 16 going on 17, you'll take care of me. It was super ridiculous, but if you embrace the ridiculousness, you actually had a really good time. So that's what my friend and I did.
Nice.
It was well worth it. And a nice way to be driven around Salzburg.
Thanks, Salzburg.
Thanks very much. Mm. And thank you for taking part in the quiz.
Oh, I guessed my way to mediocrity.
I told you it was a guessing game more than anything else, but they a lot of families within the fictional world of movies and TV shows.
Biggins. Got to have that balance.
I did have to steer clear of a lot of threes, though, because a lot of them put families of three in.
Well, it's because you've got to have the opposition and the support.
Mm.
That's the idea of siblings. One of them has to be the antagonist. The other one has to be the one you go to as a mediator between the two. There's always the one that goes off to college.
Yes.
The one that goes to college is the antagonist. Mm. The one that gets left behind was the mediator. That person then becomes the antagonist because the person off at college matures and comes back in a different role. I love it.
It's sitcom 101, isn't it?
It's the only way you can progress characters that have to reset at the end of every episode. You have to change their setting and their situation rather than their personality.
Thinking about Full House now.
Oh, speaking of which, we forgot to mention it. Shay's not here, but Fuller House season 5 dropped and she watched all 9 episodes in a day.
Wow.
Just, I think maybe even in like a sitting.
I mean, that's impressive. How many times has she watched it now, though?
I don't know. So we went to Dubbo and we went out to the zoo. It was great fun. And on the drive back, she just rinsed the data.
That's a good 5 hours worth of
watching. Yeah, so she sat in the back just watching Fuller House and I didn't have to listen and it was okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
Ba-da-da-da.
Tom, thank you very much.
Muchos, muchos, benos.